Welcome to Knowing Him. This is Steve Danielson.
And this is Angie Danielson.
Join us each week as we explore the hymns of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and share our feelings, insights, and reflections about how each one brings us closer to Jesus Christ.
Enjoy your favorites and find some undiscovered gems in our journey to knowing Him.
Greetings and salutations, my friends, to today's episode of Knowing Him. I'm your host, Steve Danielson. I'm here with my humble co-host, Angie.
Hi.
How you doing, Angie?
Good.
So I'm happy to talk about today's hymn number 196, Jesus Once of Humble Birth. This hymn corresponds with the Come Follow Me reading in Joseph Smith Matthew, Matthew 24 to 25, Mark 12 to 13, and Luke 21. Covered
another
a lot of stuff.
Big section.
In short, we are talking about the prophecies of the second coming of Jesus Christ today, which may make you wonder, why are we talking about Jesus once of humble birth? But hopefully it all makes sense by the end of the podcast.
That's what I was wondering when you picked it.
So let's start with our author. So the author of our text is Parley Parker Pratt. Parley P. Pratt.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, we typically refer to him. Born in 1807, died in 1857. I was born in New York State. Loved to read as a child. His mother started teaching him from the Bible when he was seven. I think that's a pretty good reading manual.
Yeah.
Lots of words in there that that you don't get in
normal
childhood
speech.
Readers
yeah.
today. But it means he also grew up to love the Savior. So he had a deep love of the Savior from a very young age. When he was about 15, he left home to work as a hired hand on some farms. And at 17, he and his brother purchased some land. Might have heard of his brother as well, Orson somebody or other.
Pratt?
Probably, yeah. Anyway, they bought some land to start farming on their own. And then about 18, he joined the Baptist church. He wasn't entirely convinced of their doctrines, but he found it was the closest to what he was searching for, and so he joined with them. And at the age of 20, he married his sweetheart, Thankful Halsey.
I love those old names.
Thankful Pratt. After they were married, they moved to Ohio. And while in Ohio, he heard the preaching of a Reformed Baptist minister, Sidney Rigdon. And he and some other followers of Sidney Rigdon decided to join together and create a society. So this Campbellite Society was there in Kirtland, Ohio. In August of 1830, so this is a couple months after the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints had been established, Thankful and Parley departed on a mission. So they decided they wanted to go preach the word. As I said, Parley had a deep and abiding love of the Savior. He felt that he had found something with the Campbellite Society and wanted to go out and preach. And so he and Thankful decided they wanted to sort of start back home and then sort of work their way out from there again. So on their way back to New York, they made it as far as Rochester on the Erie Canal when Parley felt he needed to disembark. He had a feeling he needed to get off, walked into the country, and was led to the acquaintance of a Mr. Hamlin who had a copy of the newly published Book of Mormon. So it had only been out for a couple months by that point. And he let Parley borrow this copy. Parley started reading in the morning and read all night. So this is a common story in the church. A lot of people know the story of Parley Pratt. This is how Parley described it. Quote, "I read all day. Eating was a burden. I had no desire for food. Sleep was a burden when the night came, for I preferred reading to sleep. As I read, the Spirit of the Lord was upon me, and I knew and comprehended that the book was true, as plainly and manifestly as a man comprehends and knows that he exists. My joy was now full, as it were, and I rejoice sufficiently to more than pay me for all the sorrows, sacrifices, and toils of my life."
That's great. I love that.
So he traveled to New York to where Joseph Smith lived. He wasn't home, but he met Hiram Smith. And he became converted to the gospel and joined the church September 1st, 1830. And from that point on until his death, he was a relentless missionary for the church. He was called on his first mission October of 1830, so a month after he was baptized.
Wow, crazy.
Sent on a mission with Oliver Cowdery and some others to the western states, which at that time was Missouri. That was as far west as you could get in the United States.
Were they taking the Book of Mormon to the Native Americans?
To the Native Americans, yep. On their way, they went through Ohio, through Kirtland, where Parley P. Pratt had been from, and there taught and baptized Sidney Rigdon and others of the Campbellite Society. And then that led to a whole another thing where Sidney then traveled to New York to meet Joseph Smith. And I mean, that's a
you could go on all night about this.
There's just so much about this early time in the church. He also marched with Zion's Camp, which we talked about with another one of our hymns. He was ordained an apostle in 1835 and then called on another mission to Canada. And on this mission, he met and baptized someone named John Taylor, who might have been important in the church later as well.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. We talked about him also. Right after he returned from Canada, his son was born, and unfortunately his wife, Thankful, passed away due to the childbirth. So in 1837, he lost Thankful. He did soon thereafter remarry, but that was his sort of childhood sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad passing. He served a mission to New York, which is where he actually met his next wife on this mission. In 1840, he served a mission to England. And while on this mission, that's where he first published the poem, Jesus Once of Humble Birth, in a hymnal there in Manchester. We'll actually talk about that later. In 1857, served another mission to the southern states.
And
unfortunately, this was his last mission because on May 13th, 1857, he was actually assassinated by people angry at him for the things they were preaching in Van Buren, Arkansas. So very sad, untimely death.
Very sad.
There's just so much to say about Parley P. Pratt.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible person, but also an incredible writer. Prolific writer of poems and hymns. He wrote an amazing autobiography, which is super thick and super great to read. I'd recommend reading it to anyone that has the time to get through that book. Not only are there lots of information about him, but just about the history of the church.
Yeah.
Such a great resource. I mean, you get like Parley P. Pratt and like Wilford Woodruff, who were just keeping these dedicated journals.
That's the reason why we have the history of the church.
Why we have it, which is why you need to write in your journals, kids.
That's right.
Hopefully, if any of my kids ever listen to this podcast, write in your journals. It's so important. Anyway, wanted to turn to our composer, Giacomo Meyerbeer.
That's quite a name.
Quite a name. Quite a mouthful. 1791 to 1864. So you may notice his name doesn't quite line up with each other. Giacomo is Italian. Meyerbeer is German.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about where all this came from. So he was a German-born opera composer, born near Berlin to a Jewish family. His birth name was Jacob Liebmann Beer.
When did that change?
I'll get there. So that was how he was born. He was a child prodigy on the piano. Absolutely amazing. Made his public debut at age 9, playing a Mozart piano concerto. And I was thinking, if he played this Mozart piano concerto at age 9, that would have been around the year 1800. Mozart died in 1791. So this is still a relatively new composition at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
It's just mind-blowing because Mozart seems so removed to us today.
Yeah.
But for Meyerbeer,
it would have been
like a generation before Mozart was writing this music.
Yeah, crazy.
People that knew Mozart were still alive. In fact, one of his teachers was Salieri, who knew Mozart intimately.
One of Meyerbeer's
teachers? One of Meyerbeer's teachers, was Salieri.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he studied composition with Salieri. He couldn't decide if he wanted to pursue composition or performance. He eventually did decide on composition. Salieri actually sent him to Italy, said this is the place you need to go to really study. So in 1816, he went there, and that's where he adopted the Italian form of his name, Giacomo.
Gotcha.
Which is just the Italian for Jacob. The Meyer in his name, which he attached onto Beer, so Meyerbeer, it's actually his mother's maiden name, and he added it after the death of his great-grandfather. I think his great-grandfather left him some money. And so to honor the inheritance and honor the family name, he attached that onto his name.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. So while in Italy, he became acquainted with the works of Rossini. Rossini, fantastic opera composer himself. Barber of Seville is one of his best known. The William Tell Overture, you may have heard of that one from his opera, William Tell. Anyway, so he loved Rossini and wrote a lot in the style that Rossini had sort of established. Sort of his first sort of rise in the public light was his sixth opera, Il Crociato in Egitto, The Crusader in Egypt, which he wrote in 1824, premiered in 1825. Very well received, which I'll talk about that later as well. Interesting note, this is the last opera written specifically for a castrato.
Oh, interesting.
So castrati were still around for a little bit after this. In fact, the last surviving castrato lived into the early 20th century long enough to make an audio recording.
Yeah.
But this is the last role specifically written for a castrato.
Hmm.
Doesn't mean they weren't still performing stuff. Just nothing else was written for it. They were sort of starting to realize, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
Maybe we should stop doing this thing. So Il Crociato in Egitto is what sort of brought him into the limelight. Really reached superstardom in 1831 with his opera Robert le Diable, Robert the Devil. Huge spectacle. Meyerbeer was known for these huge operas and sort of established the tradition of what was called grand opera through the rest of the 1800s. Other composers that came after him were very influenced by what Meyerbeer was doing. His opera The Huguenots was the first opera to receive 1,000 performances at the legendary Paris Opera.
Wow.
So during his lifetime, he was very well regarded and highly esteemed for what he was doing. He did help a young composer get off his feet in the 1840s, I believe, and get two of his early operas performed, Richard Wagner. So he was actually a protege of Meyerbeer. However, later, Wagner would actually go on the attack against Meyerbeer, whether he felt that Meyerbeer didn't help him enough or was purposely trying to thwart his career. It's not exactly clear. We do know that Wagner was a very staunch anti-Semite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did not like Jews.
Wow.
And so that probably had a lot to do. In fact, it did have a lot to do with his attacks against Meyerbeer. So he was making attacks against Meyerbeer's Jewishness.
Yeah, I had read that he was pretty much the reason why we don't know a lot about Meyerbeer nowadays, because he kind of fell out of popularity when Wagner.
Well, yeah, and then
took over
with the rise of the Nazis in the 20th century. They actually banned the performances of Meyerbeer's music and lionized
Wagner. Because he was Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and Wagner was brought up as this huge central figure, and so you have this sort of overwhelming rise of Wagnerian music and this decline in Meyerbeer's. And you know, and also the grand opera style that Meyerbeer had established was very costly. Huge casts, huge sets. I mean, just everything was gigantic, often dealt with current political situations. And so it didn't retain its timeliness and went out of fashion. So that's also part of the decline as well. However, people are now rediscovering Meyerbeer and are reexamining his music and reperforming his work. So there is a resurgence in interest in Meyerbeer's music now, which is good. So the tune for our hymn, called Deliverance.
Yeah, it's interesting because it doesn't seem like he wrote any hymns, so.
he did write other things, but he was not writing hymns specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got cantatas and concerti and things like this that other composers were doing, but mostly known for his operas. Yeah, so this tune for our hymn that we're doing, Jesus Once of Humble Birth, actually comes from one of his operas, from Il Crociato in Egitto, the Crusader in Egypt that I mentioned earlier. It's a short melody about halfway through the opera. I actually got my hands on the full score and searched through it until I found this melody. I'm like, where is this thing? I kept going page after page. Funny story, I was scanning it on my computer first and just could not get my eyes to focus on it. I'd gotten about halfway through it and fine, I'm just going to print it off. So I printed it off and tried to find that halfway point where I had been, started there, went all the way through the end. Like, oh, I couldn't find it. Maybe I'll try back at the beginning. Maybe I missed it. Went through it again, got right back near that halfway point where I had started.
Oh, no. And that's where you found it?
And that's where I found it. So, oh, well. So it has nothing to do with Jesus in this. It's about a girl named Chloe who's making eyes at a gentleman, is how the words go. I'm gonna sing this little melody here. I'm gonna back it up so I'm not so close to the mic.
Chloe de tan el bel april era giglio di candor sorrideva al suo gentil in un tenero languor.
It sounds like it comes from an opera.
Imagine that. So who decided to pair it with Parley P. Pratt's hymn text? I don't know. I mean, Pratt did serve a mission in England in 1840. This opera premiered in 1825, and it was wildly successful. So it is possible that it was still being performed when Parley P. Pratt was in England, and they went and saw it, and he heard this tune, or maybe someone else did.
Yeah.
Someone else may have paired it. I'm not entirely sure. There's not evidence pointing one way or the other.
Yeah, I wonder if the first time he published it was to this tune or if it was to something else.
Yeah, it's hard to say because it was in 1840, and I know our U.S. hymn books didn't have music printed with it until 1877. So very likely it was just the text.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, I think I saw a copy of that on Hymnary with just the text. So I'm not sure what tune they sang it to. So where the pairing came from, I'm not entirely sure. As you can hear, it is adapted. The tune that I just sang is in 6-8. There are the ornaments and the which we don't have in our
yeah.
Our so it's adapted from what Meyerbeer did. So who actually made the pairing? I don't know. But like I said, it was very popular. I want to read this review because I found this shortly before we did our podcast tonight. This is a review of the opera from England in 1825. So this is like
right after
the opera premiered. This is the second paragraph of this review. This is from a music publication, music journal, you could say, called Harmonicon, that was published in London. And this is the second paragraph of this from March 1825. The opera has been for some time expected. It was known that more than usual attention had been bestowed in order to enable it to be brought forward with all the perfection possible, that the zeal of all parties united to that of the composer himself, who had paid a visit to Trieste expressly with a view to superintend its production, was unremitting, that there had been no less than 13 full rehearsals and as many separate ones of the choruses. Expectations and impatience were therefore on the tiptoe, and its appearance was at length crowned with a unanimous and tumultuous applause. I shall not easily forget the enthusiasm which this moment produced, an enthusiasm which a calmer review of the merits of the piece has fully justified. For myself, I frankly acknowledge that of all the operas I have ever heard, the music of Il Crociato has touched me most, as well as by the novelty of its motivos, as by the sweetness of its melodies, and the grandeur and lofty character of its accompaniments.
Sounds like it was well received.
Yeah, this reviewer especially really liked it. Okay, so we talked about the fact that it was originally published in 1840 in the Manchester Hymnal. First appeared in the U.S. in a hymnal in 1889. The hymnal is called LDS Psalmody. But it had a difference in the last two phrases of the second verse from what was in the Manchester Hymnal. Hmm. So I don't know if Parley P. Pratt made this change or if someone else did, because this was published after he died. But the way the second verse ends now is, "Once upon the cross he bowed, now his chariot is the cloud." In the Manchester Hymnal it read, "Once with thieves was crucified, now on yonder cloud he rides."
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah. So another interesting point about this hymn is that up until the 1948 version, the hymn was actually printed with dynamic markings.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, which we don't normally get a variety between loud and quiet.
It's like one line would be quiet, one line would be loud.
Yeah. I'm going to sing just the first verse with the dynamics as they were marked, I guess, as late as the 1927 version. That was the last one that included the dynamics. So it would have been something like this. Jesus, once of humble birth, now in glory comes to earth. Once he suffered grief and pain, now he comes on earth to reign. Now he comes on earth to reign.
So you're just taking the different sections of, like, because Parley P. Pratt kind of wrote it with, this happened and now this is going to happen, you know? So, like, each section was either quiet or loud.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a second. I wanted to read this one quote from J. Spencer Cornwall. He was former Tabernacle Choir director. He said, quote, "It is my opinion, after hearing it sung by congregation both ways, that the loud and soft variations enhance the interest in this hymn." So he was in favor of the dynamics.
I think that works good if you're singing it as a choir. Maybe not the congregation as much, you know?
Yeah, it would be interesting. It would be interesting to sing it in a congregation and have those dynamics marked in there. That was way before our time, so we missed that experience. So let's talk about the text. Angie, could you read the text as we have it in our hymn book here?
Yeah. "Jesus, once of humble birth, now in glory comes to earth. Once he suffered grief and pain, now he comes on earth to reign. Now he comes on earth to reign. Once a meek and lowly lamb, now the Lord, the great I am. Once upon the cross he bowed, now his chariot is the cloud. Once he groaned in blood and tears, now in glory he appears. Once rejected by his own, now their king he shall be known. Once forsaken, left alone, now exalted to a throne. Once all things he meekly bore, but he now will bear no more."
That's great. So what, as you mentioned before, Parley P. Pratt sort of plays around with this once, now pairing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he's doing with this?
I think he's showing kind of a juxtaposition of things, you know, like Jesus was born in this humble way, but when he comes, his second coming, it's going to be glorious. So he's showing the two different things. Like once he had to suffer, but then he's going to come and reign as King of Kings.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's sort of playing around with this idea of paradoxes. We see a lot of paradoxes in scriptures. You know, if you want to gain your life, you must lose it. If you save your life, then how does that go? If you save your life, then you lose it. If you lose your life, you find it.
Yeah,
it's these paradoxes in the gospel and in the scriptures. And I think Parley P. Pratt is sort of playing around with the same idea. Jesus was of humble birth, but now he's coming in glory.
Yeah.
And I just love this pairing and this idea. And I think that's why I think this fits so well with this week's reading, because we're talking about the second coming. We're talking about what is happening now. It's not talking about his birth. I mean, the only thing about his birth is that first line.
And what, we have sung this at Christmas before.
Yeah.
We've done it as a Christmas
reading. It does mention his birth. Yeah. And so you could think of it that way. But the rest of the song, I mean, most of it
is about the atonement.
Is about the atonement and his second coming.
Yeah. It's kind of like Joy to the World. I mean, we always sing that one. It's Christmas, but it mostly is not about Christmas.
Yeah.
About birth.
So, as Angie has mentioned on our podcast before, each of our hymns has scriptures referenced at the bottom. So you can sort of find scriptures that go along with the hymn. And one of the scriptures that goes along with Jesus once of humble birth is Matthew 25:31. Which fits into our Come Follow Me reading for this week. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. So that's the one that is referenced here. And again, it's talking about his second coming. So this week in our reading, it's about the signs, things to look for in the second coming. Matthew 24 says, Christ tells his disciples to look for the signs, these calamities that will happen before the second coming. Talks to them about the parable of the fig tree. In fact, could you read that parable real quick? It's just verses 20 or 32 and 33 in chapter 24.
Sure. Which verses?
32 and 33.
Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. So likewise, ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors.
Okay, so what is he teaching us in this parable?
That when we see these signs, we'll know that the second coming is near, even though we don't know the exact date.
Yeah, so look for the signs. And the fig tree, that's sort of the representation. When you see those leaves,
you know
it's
coming.
Time. In fact, they were talking on the Come Follow Me or Come Follow Him podcast. This last week, they were talking about the fig tree and how the figs and the leaves come at the same time on a fig tree.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, which is interesting. And so if you're seeing those leaves, it's at the door. It's there. And then he sort of emphasizes that fact in Matthew 25. We get the parable of the 10 virgins. We get the talents given to the servants who then report back to their master. We get the separation of the sheep and the goats. We get this coming, and we don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. The 10 virgins don't know when the bridegroom's coming, but he comes, and some are ready and some are not. The servants don't know when the master's coming back to get an accounting of their talents, but when he comes back, they've got to be ready to show what they've done. The sheep and the goats, we don't know when Christ is coming to separate the sheep and the goats. Where are we going to be? Are we going to be with the sheep, or are we going to be with the goats?
Yeah.
I think the Lord is just telling us, prepare, watch. You got to be watching the signs and be ready. So our hymn today sort of fits into this whole thing. It's about his coming and how it'll be so different from his first coming. First, he was humble. Now he'll be glorious. He suffered pain. Now he's coming to reign. He was meek and lowly, and now he's the great I Am. He was rejected and now called a king. And then I love this last part of the fourth verse. Once all things he meekly bore, but he now will bear no more.
Yeah, that's great. I really love it.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to add on this hymn today?
Nope. I agree we should sing it.
Okay.
Jesus once of humble birth, now in glory comes to earth. Once he suffered grief and pain, now he comes on earth to reign. Now he comes on earth to reign. Once a meek and lowly lamb, now the Lord the great I am. Once upon the cross he bowed, now his chariot is the cloud. Now his chariot is the cloud. Once he groaned in blood and tears, now in glory he appears. Once rejected by his own, now their king he shall be known. Now their king he shall be known. Once forsaken, left alone, now exalted to a throne. Once all things he meekly bore, but he now will bear no more. But he now will bear no more.
Well, friends, thank you for joining us today as we discussed the hymn, Jesus Once of Humble Birth. As always, it's a joy to be with you and to discuss the hymns. If you'd like to connect with us, please email us at knowinghim@gmail.com or contact us through our website, knowinghim.weebly.com. We'd love to hear what you think about the podcast and about the hymns. In the meantime, I hope you'll join us next week as we sing our way to knowing Him.